afternoon, everyone. I'm Shelley Kino, host of Hashtag No Limits. Thank you for joining me today. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know what we are, but not what we will be. And I kind of changed that a little bit to we know who we are, not who we will be. I believe, though, that there is not a better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms to go into the cocoon. While it's in the cocoon, it has to struggle and fight in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. I can't imagine that that is an easy process, but neither are busting through limits where society has placed upon you. And when I say busting through those limits that we've placed upon, it's a thinking. It's a, not necessarily that people are, unfortunately, though, this does still happen where people say, no, you can't come in, or no, I'm not going to include you. But it's more a philosophy of this is as far as somebody can go. And I don't believe we should place limits on a potential for somebody, because we just don't know what kind of medical breakthroughs, scientific innovations, miracles, technological advances are going to happen. And so I love to bring these kinds of stories to you to give you all kinds of different perspectives and different ways that people are busting through limits. Today, I have the opportunity to share Sean Walsh with you, and he's going to share his story about his son and a rare neurodegenerative syndrome that his son has, and all of the not so fun things that go along with that. But again, trying to bring awareness to what's happening in the world and what's happening specifically with Sanfilippo syndrome. Sean, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I can give you a little bit of information about myself first, yeah. I guess. I started professionally, I guess. I'm a teacher at heart. I am now the Assistant Executive Director of Student Services at Lansing School District 158. And I kind of went into the IEP process and special education on a kind of the backside of everything. Back when I first started teaching, I was a special education teacher, not by choice, but because everybody, they had to have people in the, in the classroom to help teach. And they asked me to get a special license for that. So I did. I was a social studies teacher before that. So I did that, and it was a great opportunity for me. And I kind of developed from there and went on to be a principal of a school that had all special ed students. And then we ended up moving to Illinois here, cause I was in Philadelphia at the time. Okay. And, so we moved to Illinois. I was the dean of students, and then I started out as the associate principal here in Lansing School District 158, and then kind of moved up from there, and it kind of went full circle into everything. And in August of 2022, I ended up being the assistant executive director of student services. And that September is when Cannon, my youngest, was diagnosed with Sanfilippo syndrome. And we had a feeling that something was going on and something was off throughout the whole time. And that was a big issue that we had with him. He was failing, you know, all the tests that he could do, everything that he was, all the stepping stones that he had. He was not having those opportunities to do that, to do what other kids were doing. He was essentially kicked out of his preschool because of his, outbursts that he was having, and it was just too much for him. A lot of things. We ended up, we were very desperate to see what we could do in order to, help him out. Before the diagnosis, my wife had saw on TikTok another young lady, girl that her name was Hayden, and how she had had Sanfilippo syndrome and had all of the characteristics of what my son Cannon had. And she was the one that essentially pushed and pushed and pushed the doctors, where the doctors were saying, no, this is not what he has, and he just needs some time to develop and everything. And he's like, no, this is, you know, my wife had that instinct. And she said that, you know, this is, you know, that motherly instinct is, right, is true. That is for sure. And they ended up diagnosing him finally after the genetics test of Sanfilippo syndrome. And what it is basically his heparin sulfate levels will eventually kind of take over his whole body. He'll start to lose his ability to walk. He'll lose his ability to talk, his ability to feed himself. And he'll eventually pass away if there's not a cure, you know, at any point. The average life expectancy for a for someone of Cannon's stature, I guess, right now is maybe early teens. So he's six [S2] Wow. [S1] Years old right now. Yeah, so it's a very it's a progressive disease, and it goes downhill real fast. There are clinical trials finally that are coming out, which are very promising. And with the disease, there's not that many young people that have it right now. I think there's like 400 in the world really have this disease. So it's but it's like a childhood Alzheimer's disease. And so he'll, you know, end up not being able to notice us and figure it out. But right now he's in a great spot. His teachers that are working with him, his physical therapist, his occupational therapist, speech therapist, he's one of the few that are actually doing a lot better right now than what is normal. So we have him on a couple of different experimental drugs too, as well, that kind of help with the brain swelling and everything else. So we have to give him a shot every night, just to give him, and that's like one of the most heart-wrenching things, because the shot does hurt. But it's right, usually for rheumatoid arthritis. But we're even struggling to have the doctors or the insurance agencies, I should say, giving us the shot, because they want kids with Sanfilippo syndrome to have two shots a day. But the FDA is, because it's for rheumatoid arthritis, they only give you one shot per day. So we have to kind of go through the hoops, and there's been some, you know, some people have gotten the two shots and other people have not. It just depends on, you know, how we go about it. But our doctor has been pretty good as far as our geneticist getting us into that point. But yeah, with everything that's going on right now, there's a lot of things that are in place. There's a new enzyme treatment that is going to be coming out here soon, hopefully, that Cannon can get into the clinical trial. There's one at the University of North Carolina, the University of California in San Francisco, and then the one at University of Iowa. So we have some choices, hopefully, that we can get him into one of those trials, as long as everything is steady and he's not going to lose any of his abilities right now. By the end of January, hopefully that will happen.
Wow. Okay. So, holy cow. Yeah. So, you and I had met in person a few months ago. We were both speaking at the same conference, and you shared a tiny little bit then, but not even as much as you just shared now. And I can't imagine, and forgive me, because as you were talking and you were talking about your son and, you know, the early teens, you know, life prognosis, I was getting emotional. I cannot imagine what it must have been like for you and your wife and for Cannon. I mean, does Cannon understand or not, do you think?
Fortunately, he doesn't. And I think that's a good thing. But mm-hmm. his brothers and sisters do understand. And that's probably the biggest problem that we're having right now, is that the, you know, one of the biggest things that, you know, really caught my attention is that, you know, my daughter would say to my wife is, you know, like, hey, you know, you're not the only one going through this. And, you know, she's 14. My 9-year-old is having troubles in school. We have him, you know, seeing a therapist because his life is consumed by Canon, because he wants everything, you know, he wants his brother, and, he knows consequences and everything else. And being 9 years old and being as smart as Cooper is, we have all C's, by the way.
Okay.
So my 9-year-old, Cooper, he, has, you know, he's grown up so much in the last year and a half. It's been incredible as far as how, you know, what he knows about the disease and everything else. And, you know, the biggest thing, like the one thing he says, you know, for a New Year's resolution, he said this year, he goes, I want a cure for Canon. You know, and it's just like, okay, we want you to live your life too. And we want you to be able to, you know, express yourself in ways and not just be, you know, Canon Shadow. We want him to be, you know, Cooper, and we want, you know, Carson to be Carson and Connor to be Connor, and, you know, have everybody. I do have another son from a different marriage as well. His name is Sam. he lives in Philadelphia right now, but, he is, you know, they all are, you know, kind of gathering around him and around Canon and trying to do what they can. And it's nice to see that. I know that Connor is graduating this year. He wants to be a special education teacher, which is fantastic. I think that's wonderful. And that's because of his work he's done with Canon. I think that, you know, my daughter wants to be, you know, something in special education or a doctor field as well. You know, Sam, my son, in Philadelphia, he's a junior. He's going to want to do something here soon as well. So it's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be, you know, going on. And I know that, my 9-year-old wants to be a geneticist. So I'm like, okay, that's great. You know, that's hopefully because he wants to find that cure. But, you know, but it's defined our family. And that's been kind of the hardest thing as well, is that it, you know, Canon has, it consumes us, a lot of things that we do. But we've had a lot of support from a lot of people, family, friends. My school district has supported us. Every November 16th is World San Filippo Syndrome Day, and that's one of those days that everybody in our school district wears purple, which is awesome. So it's you know, one of those things that now we have other school districts that are doing it too across Illinois as well. So it's, you know, just with reaching out and talking to people about it, it's been, you know, wonderful. You know, when we had talked, you know, briefly about what I was doing, you know, just kind of spreading awareness in my talks that I was having, with my superintendent, here, myself and Dr. Schilling, we would talk about, you know, the IEP process and how we were, and even though I know a lot about the IEP process, I was overwhelmed as a parent coming into it and having it being my own. And I just, after my first meeting and my first, you know, initial like evaluation of Canon and everything else, we sat down and I went home and I go, wow, that was intense. There was a lot of stuff going on. I don't know if I liked what I heard. I had to kind of, you know, kind of sit down and talk about it a little bit more with my wife. And we sat down and I said, you know what, I want to call another meeting because,
good for you.
This was not what I was expecting. And, so we did. We ended up calling another meeting, and I told them, I said, you know, this is, you know, I don't want to think that, with his, diagnosis that he's going to be one of those kids that are going to go up, you know, cause you know, in IPs, we always want to have those, you know, the goals to be shooting upwards, and, you know, eventually they get out of the IEP process. For Canon, that's going to be totally different. If he can stay at a level and stay the same, I'll be very, very happy with it. And one of the things with San Filippo syndrome, and I talked to a lot of the, parents that have Sanfilippo syndrome as well about their IEP is that we want to front load a lot of our services right away. And because we don't want that regression to happen. So that's one of the things that I talk about with the parents is say, hey, you know what, even though you don't, your child may not need physical therapy right now, get it, ask for it. I had to ask for it. I had to beg for it. I had to plead for it because it was something that I knew he needed because it was something that needs to be front loaded. Speech, OT, that was going to be a given. We knew that was going to be something that he was going to get, but the physical therapy was a struggle to get. And I'm still fighting, the district because they say he doesn't need it. And I'm like, well, he does right. need it because he's getting it outside services for it as well. And right. I want him to have, as much as possible so that he doesn't lose any, form of balance or anything of that nature that's going to hurt him in the end, because if his IEP, if his progress doesn't stay the same, it's going to be an issue for me to get him into a clinical trial. Gotcha. If he starts going downhill, it's going to be hard for me to attempt to get him to get the help that he needs, I guess, at this point.
Yeah. And I'm so thankful. Sorry. I hope I didn't cut you off. I'm so thankful that you shared that. Because one of the things and how we met is what I was speaking on was writing the IEP and how to write a really good, solid, appropriate IEP to meet the child's unique needs. And that's one of the things that I teach, because we as educators don't often defer to the parent when it comes to what are the goals within the IEP. And I always tell my educators that we need to be talking to the parents. We need to get the parents' concerns, and we need to talk to them. As you said, when you first went into that meeting, it was so daunting and overwhelming. We need to talk with the parent before they're in that situation. Reaching out to the parent with maybe a questionnaire if you don't want an open-ended question of what are your concerns. But, some sort of little questionnaire. And I've developed that sort of thing so that parents can think about really what your concerns are before you're in that stressful situation of having however many pairs of eyes looking at you and anticipating that you give us some golden nugget of, your concern right there in that stressful moment. And I get pushback like, well, my parents don't answer them. My parents don't have concerns. And I'm like, we got to get it again. We got to get it to them ahead of time. And the knowledge that you shared of what you need him to be doing consistently, like I would never know that he needs to be consistent for a clinical trial, because that is not, as an educator, what's on the forefront of my mind. I'm thinking, academics, I'm thinking math, reading, writing, language. I'm not
That's
thinking
the last
about
thing
clinical
I'm thinking
trials.
About.
Right. Exactly.
And that's the last thing I'm thinking about. And we even though my wife and I have talked about it, saying that, hey, he might be able to read a little bit. I mean, he's barely able to trace his name right now, and which is great. And this is wonderful because he's starting to do that. But those are for him to read, he can count to three. I think that's great. He can't count, above three. It's one, two, and his three is it sounds like eight, but we know that it's three. But for him to talk and for him to say a complete sentence is hard for him. It's hard for him to do that. He has to do a lot of sign language. He has to do a lot of trying to get your attention to know where he needs to go. He'll take his teacher, and I love his teacher to death because his teacher does a great job, and he'll direct her to where he needs to be and what he needs to do. I think that the school that he's at right now has been wonderful. They're pretty much fully inclusive as far as with him in the classroom. They have they call them bulldog buddies because we're the Crown Point Bulldogs. But he has little buddies. He has a fifth grade buddy that helps him out at all times. Just kind of gets him off the bus, gets him into his classroom, gets him prepared for class. And then that's what that fifth grader, and they have to, they have to apply for the position.
That's awesome.
It's great. He has several people that want to be his, you know, kind of his helper. And the one guy that he has right now that's going to be in he's in fifth grade right now. He just does a tremendous job. And one of the biggest things that his mom even came to us and said, you know, if it wasn't for Cannon, my son would have had, he had some issues in fourth grade and he didn't know what he wanted to do. And now he has like a direction of where he wants to go because of Cannon. And it's just been one of those things that, you know, when you know that Cannon has touched somebody's life, that's where I'm like, okay, that's great. That's what I want to hear. And, as much as this disease is so, it's such a terrible thing. I think that he's touched so many lives, even with, you know, our advocacy for it, and how we've, kind of, you know, expanded it and tried to help out everybody. My wife's on TikTok all the time. And she does her TikToks with him and spreads awareness that way. And I do the speaking at, for the IEPs. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about with the IEPs, is, you know, getting the parents involved. And with getting those parents involved, we had to do something, because I looked at it. I said to myself, are we doing that in my district too? Are we just putting everybody into a circle and just saying, okay, here's what we're going to do, and overwhelming the parent and not really getting that input that we need from the parent? And so we started some things, this year that we were going to, have parent meetings via Zoom, where we're going to go on Zoom and we're going to talk about the IEP process at the beginning. And eventually it's going to be like once a month where we go into eventually where we're going to have the parents be able to talk about their child's goals at these meetings and actually develop the goals and before the meeting to help with the teacher. So the teacher would have the goals and then the parent would have the goals as well. So then they kind of bring it together so that they can say, okay, well, this is what I'm thinking. Well, this is what I'm thinking as the parent. So then when we go into the meeting, it's going to be it's going to be something where everybody's involved and everybody's going to take some ownership into what the child is doing. So that was kind of where I, you know, with me speaking and everything, I was so overwhelmed with what was happening that I was just afraid of, you know, what was going to, what we were going to do. And so then, you know, we figured it out, and, you know, my boss and I, we just sat down and we said, let's do this. And we ended up, you know, doing a great, you know, thing for our families. So it's been fun. It's been something that we want to continue to do.
Yeah. And while this is such a difficult journey for your family to be on, I'm sure the great things that have already come out of Cannon's life, the changes that your school district is making, that's one of the biggest concerns that I have from parents when they call me to help to come and coach them is I don't feel like the school ever listens to me. And to know now that you're developing something in your school, and hopefully since you were talking about it here, you know, other schools will pick up on the idea and develop something as well like that, because the parents are equal members of the IEP team. And so often, and I probably was guilty of this occasionally when I taught as well, that I didn't always treat them as an equal. I didn't truly always get equal input from them when developing their child's IEP. I feel like I did a good job of that, but I'm sure I probably didn't do the best job of that. And that's what I'm trying to do now, you know, is come in and coach educators and families to truly be collaborative. Because at the base of why we're meeting, there's a child. And our pride, our insecurities, our feelings shouldn't take the child down a path that isn't the right path for him or her. Right. And yeah, as Fran says, parents are not the enemy to educators. And our society, we just keep seeming to do that more and more with everything. Everything is split all the time, it seems like. And we're getting, I think, worse with that. So thank you for starting that in your school. And thank you, Fran, for that comment. And you were going to comment something. I cut you off.
No, it's just, you know, I there's been times where I would go to the parent and I've done this, you know, ever since this diagnosis, and I put myself in their shoes. And if I don't like what I'm hearing, I will ask the parent, are you really, is this okay? Because as a parent, and I'll tell them, I tell them straight up, but as a parent, I would want a little bit more, or I would want something else here. And we'll end up changing the IEP process right there and change the goal for the parent. If you're comfortable with it, it's okay. But, you know, I think that there could be a little bit more, and we can change it a little bit more. What do you think about this, mom? Or what do you think about this, dad? Just to get that, you know, kind of going. I think that, you know, this whole process of this has evolved so much that we're trying things in our school now that with inclusive classrooms, where we're using our junior high as an example for our science and social studies classes, and putting them in that moment and getting help from the state to kind of help us with kind of maneuvering how that's going to look like in the future, so that we can start kind of go down from our fifth grade classes and our fourth grade classes and so on and so forth, so that we can have more of an inclusive classroom type setting for our students. Because, you know, I think in your book, I think you say it a lot in your book that you have, is that you know, just having that inclusive classroom, you know, and having, you know, students that are involved more with other students, it just enhances their learning, and it really does. And you can see it, even with Cannon goes into a classroom and goes in about 20% of the time. He goes into classes and goes into a PE class or goes into music or goes into art, and with the regular education classroom. And you could see that how he has progressed over the years. So it's great. So it's one of those things that, you know, working together with the teachers and working together with the students in the other classroom, it's a thing that it's a process, but, you know, we're all in here to learn something about it. And I think we learn more from our students than we do from anything else. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that we have to know, is that we have to meet them at their level and see where they are, and then kind of go from there and kind of move that and move that that barrier and find out what the barrier is, because the barrier could be something simple as, oh, well, maybe they learn a little bit differently, you know, this way, or they need like help from a friend, or they would get it more if like a friend would help them or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And you know, not everybody needs an IEP, but everybody does need help.
Right. Sure. That is so very true. Absolutely. So true. So Fran says, as a reminder, educators are not the enemy either, but rather working together, we can make great support for the student. That's absolutely true. And I agree with that. Sean, I want to ask you a question, because we're both educators, but you're an administrator now, and I've not been in that role. And so since you have those eyes, I always say I've never seen things through an administrator's eyes. Is there anything that you could say, oh, this is why educators think or feel a certain way when it comes to parents, or when it comes to writing the IEP or their classrooms, as to what causes that animosity?
Yeah. So I think it's the, almost the daily grind. And I look at it this way. So when I was a building administrator, it was different than what I am now. I'm as in a district administrator, where I can see things at 35,000 feet. Mm-hmm. Whereas a building administrator, I was seeing things at maybe 10,000 to 5,000 feet. And as a teacher, I was in it. You know, there was,
right. You're ground zero,
you're ready to go. And there's, you know, there's something that, you know, and I think that the teachers, the animosity comes from is that they're constantly dealing with the, either the behavior or the academics or the or something, and they're getting frustrated because they don't see, they're not kind of looking outside the box, or they're not, they have their kind of, you know, have you know, a blinders on, I guess, and they're just going to seeing one thing through, and they're not looking at the IEP itself, maybe, or they're looking at it saying, okay, well, you know, I have to get this goal done, or I have to do this, or I have to do that. When in reality, we may need to think a little bit differently, and kind of, you know, kind of circle around. And then as an administrator, I think as a building administrator, seeing it from 5,000 feet or 10,000 feet, I was still kind of in there. And there would be times where the parent would come in and they would be, you know, mad at the teacher or whatever it was. And you have to talk them down, and you could see that, you know, their frustration and everything. But you were frustrated as well, because you would get, you know, get that because you were involved in it, you know, more so than anything else. As a district administrator, I kind of get to see the whole thing, the whole picture. And I don't have to make it a decision right away. I can kind of sit back and say, well, let me get back to you on this. Let me do some little bit of research on it. Let me do something here, or let me look at it in a different perspective. And I think as a district administrator, I kind of pull that and get that opportunity to do that, where teachers don't get that opportunity to do that all the time. And it's kind of, I kind of want to tell my teachers, just kind of slow down a little bit. And just, you know, take a step back. You don't have to make a decision right away. And even if it's the next day, I mean, the student's going to come back. You're going to come back the next day. So everybody's going to be there again. So you don't have to make a decision right away. It doesn't have to be a split second decision. You can actually make those if you just sit that back and relax and think it through before you do anything. I think that's probably the better thing for you to do. But it's hard, but I think that's where the animosity is, because you're in the day-to-day mix and you have all these things that you're look at, as a teacher, you're looking at, you know, I have to get this done. I have to get this done. I have to, you know, this needs to be done. And if you just take that step back, because everything's going to be there, you know, for you tomorrow too. Right. But if you take that step back for a minute or two, you'll be able to, you know, adjust a little bit better. And I think that's where there's the disconnect can come in at sometimes, because you're getting so frustrated because the parent could be mad at you, or you could be, you know, mad at the child for doing something or whatever it may be. And they don't realize to just take that step back and say, okay, hey, you're the adult in the situation. You're the one that can take charge of this. And it's the way that you take charge of it is the way that you're going to be able to handle it a little bit better. And I think that if teachers did that more, I think that they would have a better outcome in the end. But that's my take as far as an administrator goes, because I think that in that piece is I can see things up here, and I can kind of see things where you're not going to be able to see as a teacher, because you're always in the grind and you're always doing it, and you're off to the next thing, and you're off to this thing, and you're off to this thing, where I can kind of sit back and say, okay, wait a second, let's take a step back and let's see what really we can do to help change that.
Yeah, that's a great answer and a perspective that I had not considered before. And so very much appreciate that. And I think in my role as an educator, I got to see the students many times for multiple years. And so I did have a little bit more of that, you know, 35,000 foot, maybe not 35,000, but maybe 15,000. Like I was in it, but I got to see the progress over time. Right. And so I could see things differently than especially the gen ed teachers or even special ed teachers in other districts who only had a student for a year. And then they went to, you know, the next grade level special ed student. And that's something that when I do book studies, I ask for people to give the pros and cons of special ed teachers having their students for 1 year or for multiple years, because there definitely are pros and cons for both. But yeah, I so appreciate that different level of views and happy that you've had that experience. And so now if you can combine those different level of views with the parental view, how can parents help teachers? How can teachers help parents that are in it? daily in the moment, and they don't have that high view like you have as a district administrator?
I think that it's all about relationships. To be honest with you, I think the teacher has to develop that relationship with the parent, and the parent has to accept that relationship. And I think that if once they have that bond, I mean, I can talk to my son's teacher today, and even though she's off, I could send her a message right now, and she'd answer it in a second. Even though I know she's in Disney right now, running a marathon or whatever. But I could actually ask her, hey, you know, this is what I'm thinking about with Cannon, and she would answer me within probably a day or two, and just say, hey, you know, yeah, this is great, great idea. Let's try it. And but it's that relationship that we've built. Even in such a short time, because he's in kindergarten. So, I mean, this is it. But she's going to be Mrs. Zolp. I'm gonna just give her a shout out right now. But she's going to be his teacher through fifth grade. Okay. And she knows that. And she wants to make sure that she's going to be developing him throughout the whole time. But we've developed the relationship right away, and it was so easy because of the way she had handled things. She came in, she asked questions. I gave her a worksheet that said, this is my child at the beginning of the year. I said, I gave it to the nurse, and I gave it to his teacher, and I gave it to the principal. I said, this is Cannon. This is what he has. He has this disease. We have to watch how he eats, because, you know, we have things, chopped up. We have to have these things, and that was kind of the icebreaker right there. Was as a parent, I gave that to the teacher, and the teacher was like, I didn't know anything about this. So she went home and did research on it, and she was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And this is, I want to do more. So, it was great to see that the teachers developing that relationship with you, and you have to be out there, and as a parent, you have to go out there and give yourself up and be vulnerable too as well. Cause I don't know it all. I don't. And I think that, Cannon's doing a great job. And I think the teachers have their own way of handling Cannon, and I have my own way of handling Cannon, and my wife has a different way of handling Cannon. And do I get frustrated sometimes? Absolutely. Sure. Does my wife get frustrated? Absolutely. Does the teacher get frustrated? Absolutely. But we all talk to each other all the time. If something happens like that, it's great to have that set up where the teacher will contact me and say, hey, this is what Cannon did today, and what do you think about that? One of the biggest things that lately is that Cannon, which we never thought would happen, but he potty trained himself.
Fantastic.
It was fantastic. We didn't think that it was ever going to happen, because usually children with Sanfilippo syndrome are not potty trained, and they have to wear diapers throughout their whole lives. He does not right now. And it's been great. Has he had accidents? Absolutely. But he's only had a few accidents here and there, and I think it was because the teacher helping him out in school and having it like a set time of when he had to go to the bathroom or whatever. But he is now like almost fully potty trained, and it's been wonderful. And
so awesome.
If it wasn't for us to have that, relationship with the teacher and working out, that's where it really that happened. If we didn't have that relationship with the teacher, we would never have that happen for Cannon. We would have thought that this wouldn't have happened, but working together, it's been wonderful for us. So.
Yeah. And I think that's so incredibly important, right? Absolutely. I agree with you about the relationships, I, to this day, I haven't taught several of my students for a decade or more, and I'm still in contact and still connected, via Facebook or text messaging every once in a while, I run into them in the community. And it's such a joyful thing, because we were able to develop those relationships. And as I said, I had most of my students for several years, but even students that for whatever reason I did only have for 1 year, or even just a semester, I tried to do that because, as we mentioned a little while ago, your priorities are not always going to be the same as mine. And having that understanding and the potty training thing, I did that with several of my students, brushing teeth, you know, some of the hygiene things. And I think what I want to say here is, even if your child isn't as complex as what Cannon or some of the students that I just mentioned are, it's still important, and tell me if you disagree or not with this, for the parents of children who learn differently to talk with their teachers, their child's teachers, and have those relationships. Because again, even though it might not be life skills like potty training or teeth brushing or brushing their hair or getting dressed or whatever, if it's just more academics, where the child's going in life, we still need to have that input, because the parents, again, the priorities just might be different. So do you recommend?
I do, because it is so important, because I always have parents reaching out to me and asking me, hey, you know, my child is not doing well in math or not doing well in, you know, English or whatever it may be. And we try to at least give some supports. And even if it's not meaning that the student necessarily needs an IEP, we come up with some other ideas that we can come up with the teachers, with the assistant principals or principals of the schools. And we talk to them about, can we do a, you know, student support system for him? Can we have, or her, can we have a, extra help in small groups, or have extra help at the end of the school day, or something that can help with this child? Because what I always look at is saying, the first thing that a lot of parents say is that my child needs an IEP. Well, what supports have the school given to help you out, and what supports have you put in place? You know, if the teacher or if the parent says, well, I've taken my child to X, Y, and Z, and he's still not doing well, and the school has done, you know, A, B, and C, that's, then I'm going, okay, there may be a learning disability here, so we need to kind of work mm-hmm. on something there. But in reality, if you're not making a teacher aware as a parent of your concerns, you're doing a disservice to your child too, I think. And the same thing with the teacher. If the teacher is seeing things and not communicating that to the parent, they're doing a disservice to the child. And, you know, we're in this business for a reason. We're in this business to help children. And, if we're doing what's best for children, we're never going to be wrong. Exactly. And, so we just have to go in. We think about that. And I think about that all the time, is that if somebody comes to me with an idea and I say, well, is that what's best for children? And they say, yes, perfect, let's do it. You know, and but we need to do kind of look at that more in that lens more than anything, as far as parents go and as teachers. If we're not talking to each other and we're still not doing what is best for the child, that's what's going to, it's going to hurt the child in the end, and we don't want to do that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. We get, like I said, I think our pride gets in the way, or fear, or that lens of I'm in it in the trenches every day, you know, and we forget that, oh, by the way, there's this child, and that's really who we got into education to help. And I mean, you ask most teachers, if you ask teachers, most teachers give the answer of I got into education to help, or, you know, to make education fun, or, you know, it comes down to the child. It doesn't, it's like, oh, I got it. My husband is a teacher, and he actually got a gift a couple of years ago as a joke. And it was a poster board. And it said, I got into teaching for the fame and fortune. You know, nobody goes into teaching right for the fame and fortune.
Absolutely.
And so just remembering, like, we went into this knowing we weren't going to make a lot of money, but we were going to change the world because of how we were educating the people that were gifted to us every day in our classrooms.
But you think about it too, is that you're famous because you go in there and if you go into the store and a child comes up to you and says, "Hey, you've changed my life," or "You've done this," that's probably the best feeling in the world. For me, true. I think that's one of that's better than any fame and fortune ever, is that when a child comes up and says, "You know what, you've impacted me in some way, shape or form." That's, I love it. And if I could do that more and more to as many, children as possible, I would do it. Again and again and again. Like you said, we don't need the money. It's not we're not in it for the money. We're in it for, helping the children out.
Yeah. We as educators have the most important and best job in the world because we truly are shaping the future and guiding it. And, we're raising the next innovators and scientists and medical professionals. And our job is overwhelmingly beautiful and scary at the same time. When you really think about all that really rests upon the shoulders of educators. So I want to bring up the website, the Cure Sanfilippo Foundation. And the first part that I am going to bring up is the part where your son is. So you want to go ahead and talk about this a little bit?
Sure. This is just, this is my family, or this is the, Cure Canon. And you can come in and help and donate, to the cause. Like I said, there's going to be, some clinical trials out there. The only way we can get clinical trials, is through, people like the Cure Sanfilippo Foundation, where they can go in there and get that information out there. But this is, where I'm from, his birthday, he has type A, just kind of meeting the family, and how we are and how he has been and, how he was diagnosed and what it feels like and how has it affected our child, how has it affected our family. Canon has been, a joy to our family. He's been wonderful. We're so happy that we found people like the Cure Sanfilippo Foundation to help us through. The people that started the Cure Sanfilippo Foundation, their daughter has the disease as well. And it's just been one of those things that she's 12 years old right now. And they've been wonderful as far as helping us through every step of the way, giving us the ability to even have these types of opportunities to do a clinical clinical trial of any sort. And you can see the Saving Eliza. That's their daughter.
Okay.
So they do a great job with that. But, if you take a look at it, if you can look into, Cure Sanfilippo Foundation, you can also look at, my wife Lindsay's, TikToks. If you want to go on, and see, it's Team Canon Can. That's his TikTok page, and his, Instagram page as well as Team Canon Can. So if you wanted to look that up as well, you can do that too. And we're more than happy to spread that awareness. And if you do, if you never heard of this disease before, look it up and share it with somebody so that we can spread that awareness a little bit more.
Sorry, I'm trying to quickly pull up your, there it is. Whoops, I just passed it. Team Canon Can?
Yep.
Okay, I'm not finding it quick enough. All right, well, I was going to put up the Instagram as well, but it was at Team Canon Can. Okay, I don't know why I'm not finding it. Maybe I spelled Canon wrong. Is Canon with two N's or one?
Two.
Two. Oh, that's what it is. See, I only put one in there. That's probably why. Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. So let me pull that up really quick, and then I can share that for everybody as well and give that. So I do currently have the CureSanfilippoFoundation.org website. up on the screen. And then once you get to that website, you can see there at the top of the screen, it says Meet the Families. If you click there, then you will be able to find Canon's story. And then here is Instagram.com/TeamCanonCan. And let's see if it, I'm going to stop sharing this one for just a second and pull up the next. I'm going to pull up the Instagram page just so that everybody can see that as well. So we didn't really talk about too much, you know, what it was like when you first got the diagnosis for him and, you know, how that, and I love this. I was born with the potential to do anything. Just kind of, if you don't mind talking about that a little bit, just the, you know, what were some of those things that you were seeing that said, I mean, I know you said she saw it as a TikTok, but, what were the things that you were seeing in him that, and then getting that diagnosis?
Yeah. So he was initially diagnosed with autism, and we actually keep the autism diagnosis because we can actually get more, benefits from that. Because the insurance agencies recognize autism more than Sanfilippo syndrome. So to get him his physical therapy and his OT and his PT, it has to be under the autism diagnosis, which is kind of crazy, but it is what it is. But so he was initially diagnosed with that, even though we saw that there was his autism. The autism diagnosis really wasn't there for him with his, like, he has great eye contact. He doesn't, he does, space off here and there, but it's not where it's, where, autism is, where you normally diagnose a person with that. Sanfilippo syndrome, they have coarse hair. He has very coarse hair to the point where it's hard to manage, and you just don't have that. They have really bushy eyebrows. They have like a pinched nose a little bit. They have a lot of characteristics that they use that are very autism like. He walks on his tippy toes a lot. He does a lot of different movements. But his delayed speech was very bad. He got chronic earaches almost all the time. He had to have his the adenoids out or whatever, and had to have his he had to have all sorts of, because he would have all sorts of issues with his ears and his throat and everything else. And it was just, it was an ongoing issue, where he would have, constant earaches, and we had to get, tubes in his ears twice. And everybody said, well, that's what's causing him not to talk, is that he can't hear because everything is all muffled. Okay. Well, it didn't happen that way. We thought that, that would cure everything, but that didn't happen. He had sleep apnea. That's why his adenoids were out. That's why I'm sorry. Okay. So he had severe sleep apnea. Now he doesn't have that as much, but, which is great, so that we would, constantly be up at night checking him, because we'd think that he was not breathing or whatever it may be. And it was just because that's how the syndrome kind of works. So all these things that were coming into play, that's how we kind of felt like we needed to go a little bit further. It was going to take a year almost to get him, looked at for Lurie, Children's Hospital. We ended up getting him in Riley's in Indiana, in Indianapolis. And we had a Zoom, and that's how they looked at him. And they said, yeah, he has a genetics. There's something, genetically wrong. We need to get him tested. So when we got him tested, that's when we found out that he had the Sanfilippo syndrome. That's where it kind of went kind of from there. So then we started seeing more, rare, disease specialists. And then we got him, we started advocating for him right away. We got into the newspaper a couple of times, and when we got into the newspaper for his disease, that's when we got into Lurie's because of somebody that was a patient there, and their child had a Hunter syndrome, and said that their geneticist is one of the leading specialists in MPS3, which is what he has. I couldn't tell you the whole name of it because it's very right. long. I can get. She said to my wife, I can get you in, and I have her personal number. And we called up the doctor, and the doctor said right away, get him in. I'll see him. And we got him in the next month, and we've seen her ever since. She's been wonderful. The team at Lurie's has been wonderful. But it would have taken us a year to get in because, and one of the things that we kept advocating about was, if you knew that your child has the potential of possibly dying, and you're not getting to see him, right away, how does that feel, parent? And we were telling the doctors that this is just not, because we knew something was wrong and we wanted to get something diagnosed right away. So once we found out, how to do that, it was, we just advocated. And, if I can say anything to any parent out there, is just advocate for your child. If you think that there's something wrong, go and try to get, and if somebody says no to you, go to somebody else. If you still think there's something wrong, you just have to keep going.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought that back up because I was going to bring that because you had mentioned that earlier that your wife just kept saying, no, this isn't right. There is something else. Something else is going. And I hear that so often when I have these kinds of conversations with parents. And so absolutely that intuition, mama gut, daddy gut, whatever you want to call it. If that is telling you that what you're hearing is not the right answer, it doesn't matter if everybody thinks you're crazy. Just keep asking. Again, as I mentioned before, the whole idea for this hashtag no limits is, we don't know what kind of medical advances there are going to be. And the fact that we are finding more and more things out all the time genetically, with, like you said, this was discovered and officially given a name because of a genetics test. We're learning constantly about our genetics and different things that are unique and that are causing syndromes and diseases and advances. So just keep asking because somebody somewhere is going to either find a solution. And I think you have several children who are going to be working on that path in the future, finding those solutions and hopefully finding ways to elongate the lives of people with this or completely cure it. And that's a hope I think that we can all have. And so unfortunately we need to wrap up.
Yeah, I understand.
And so I very much, that's as I said, that's the hope that I have for you and for all people, who have, there's so many rare genetics things being found out all the time now. And so just keep pushing and just keep having the hope that somebody somewhere is going to have the answer for you. Is there anything else, one last little thing that you would like to say?
No, just, one of the things I wear this purple Team Can thing, and it just says, there is always hope, and there's always hope for everybody. And, we just keep that the journey going, and there is always hope.
Awesome. And I don't know if it's coming through, but I wore purple today, and I did not know that that was the color. So
I saw that. I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, no, it was totally done on purpose and totally intentional because I knew. Yeah. But no, that was completely accidental. I did not know that that was the color for Sanfilippo syndrome. So thank you, Fran, for joining us today and interacting with us. I'm pretty sure that Sean saw all the all your comments as I was posting them up there. But I appreciate the comments from Fran and anyone else who has joined. If you have any further questions for Sean or myself, if you happen to be catching this in the replay, please put them in. I get notifications when somebody comments, and so I will check it out. And if it's a question for Sean, I will be sure to get it to him. If you want to learn more about the San Filippo Foundation or Canon Story, like I said, go to that curesanfilippofoundation.org and look under the Meet the Families and scroll down a little bit. They're alphabetical. So you scroll down a little bit and you'll find Canon Story there. And join me next week for another episode of Hashtag No Limits. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.